Thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast, where we make adulting easier by making money easier. This is your host, Lauren, and I'm joined today by Lindsay Stamp, a 30-year-old stock and real estate investor who paid off $100,000 in consumer debt and is documenting her wealth building journey on X/Twitter at LindsayStamp3. Lindsay hopes to show others that financial independence is attainable by consistently investing your 9-to-5 income over the long term. Thanks for joining me, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me, Lauren.
Yeah, I'm excited. So our goal for today, make adulting easier for listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, since managing money is a big part of adulting. So today, Lindsay, we're going to talk about investing. But first, I got to know, $100,000 of debt, like what was that? How'd that happen?
Yeah, so long story short, I got out of college in 2015 and I got a job in corporate America working in insurance. And first time in my life I was ever making money, and was a broke college kid playing basketball in school and really just spent my time playing basketball and going to class and not working, obviously. And so having money for the first time was like the best. So I just, you know, it started out small and then it just kind of grew. So the $100,000 in debt was car loan, small student loan, credit card, mostly put like, I had bought a house, and my first house I bought in 2018, and put like a whole bunch of furniture on a credit card, took out a 401k loan. You know, it was just a little bit of everything that just kind of added up over time.
Isn't that interesting? It's like the first time you have money, you spend that money and then more. Why is that?
Yeah, no, great question. And it's like my mindset, I think at the time was, can I afford the payment? Not can I afford the actual purchase. It was like, okay, I really want this Jeep Wrangler. I've always wanted a Jeep Wrangler. I have a job. I have a steady paycheck. I can afford the payment. I can, you know, afford the insurance. Like, let's do it. And then before you know it, like all of your monthly income is spoken for because of payments and debt. And it's not a fun place to be. But I'm grateful that I was able to turn it around.
Yeah. No, of course. That is interesting. Growing up, I knew about like car payments and stuff, but I certainly had saved money to buy my second car. My parents gave me my first car in high school, and it was relatively new at the time. So I was like 24 by the time I needed a new car, and I had saved like $10,000 in cash. And I remember going, and it was like a Mazda 6 or something, and they were like, all right, here's your payment. They said, slide me the sheet. Here's your payment if you put zero down, $1,000 down, or $2,000 down. I was like,
yep,
that's it. That, like, I thought it would be like 0, 5, and 10, or, you know, what I mean? Like, it was the wild. And that was the moment where it hit me like, oh, this is how most people think about this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, I didn't like have a lot of financial literacy. Like, I feel like it just wasn't something that really was talked about in my family, not because like my parents hid it or anything, but because, you know, they kind of handled their finances between the two of them. And, you know, I knew that, you know, we went on vacation every year, and I knew both my parents worked really hard. My mom was a nurse, and then in the evening she did home health care, and my dad was in sales, and then he had a paper route in the morning from 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. before he went to his like 9-to-5 job. So my parents worked really hard, but we lived like as a middle-class family in a nice home. And I went to private school my entire life. My high school was like $8,000 a year or something insane like that. And my brother did the same thing, went to a private school, same cost. So like, I just, you know, never really learned about it, talked about it. My dad was frugal. You know, he was like, he didn't need new things all the time and didn't care about new cars and new clothes and stuff like that. But I'll be the first one to admit that when I graduated and got out into the real world, like I just really didn't know what the right things to do were and weren't. And I think a lot of young people kind of get trapped in that, where like, you don't know what you don't know. You're just trying to make it through the day, make it through the week. And before you know it, like the end of the month is here and your money's gone, and you know, you still have days left. And that's kind of what I fell into.
There's nothing wrong with not knowing stuff you weren't taught. And that's something. And then because we get in this weird thing where like we then start to feel bad or feel shame that we didn't know the things we were never taught, which is just I can't really think of anything else that's like that other than money. But so when did you come to the realization that, all right, I need to probably stop buying things on credit and pay this stuff off?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story, I think. Me and my family in 2017, we were actually at Route 91 Harvest Fest when the shooting happened at the concert in Vegas. And it was like obviously a traumatic event, but it completely changed like the trajectory of my life, I guess you could say. Like I realized life is so short and anything can happen at any time. And I realized that I was so silly waking up every day, going to a job I hated just to get a paycheck to pay off things that I had already bought. And it was like, it completely changed everything for me where I was like, if I don't want to keep working a job I hate, what do I have to do? I have to pay off my debt. I have to have some investments. And then I can leave the job that I hate and go do something I'm passionate about because life is too short to live with this way. That's the short story. And so in 2018, I remember it like it was yesterday. I was driving to work and I was listening to Bigger Pockets podcast and I was like hearing Mr. Money Mustache and other guys talking about fire and retiring early and they're in their 30s and they have enough money invested in stocks and real estate and they were able to leave their job and live off their investments. And it was a completely foreign concept to me at the time, but I'm like, if they can do it, can I do it too? And so I just like read the Dave Ramsey Total Money Makeover workbook, because I had a lot of debt, obviously, and I knew like if I want to start investing, I have to pay off the debt, free up my income, use my income to buy assets that are going to appreciate. And made a plan and it took a little while, like after I read the book and after I kind of had these revelations, like I need to do something different with my life. It took a while to put those principles into practice. But then we just went full steam ahead. We just like sold everything and made a budget, like a strict budget, got extra jobs, drove DoorDash, bartended, worked at GNC for a while, like just did any and everything to make more money and slashed our expenses, cut everything. And I've said it before, but it wasn't glamorous. It wasn't like super fun to do that, but we were able to pay off the debt and we're in a completely different position today than we were 5 years ago.
So 2017, you go through this traumatic event. It's interesting because I feel like I could see it going the other way and you like YOLOing, like forget paying down debt and saving and investing. Like I'm just gonna have fun today. So that's interesting. And obviously I think the healthier direction to take is, okay, what are the steps that I can take to live the life that I want to live every day after that? So you're paying
That
off.
wasn't like, I just want to say, I didn't like do the right things initially, like this happened in 2017 and I didn't even like start this process until late 2018. So there was that time of doing all of the wrong things, which put me more into debt, going to the bars with my friends on the weekends, escaping my reality, drinking, partying, doing all these things. I did all of that. And all it did was add to my debt, add to my debt. Like I just put it off, put it off until I got to the point where it was like, this is 6 figures in debt. I need to make a change. So I definitely did that. I don't want to say that I didn't.
Okay, so there was something also that clicked at six figures. That was the moment where you're like, oh man, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, like I think a lot of people don't ever like take on their debt or make a plan to pay it because they never actually add it up and look at the reality of it. It's like in the back of your mind, it's like, you have a $20,000 car loan and you have a $15,000 student loan, you got like a few thousand on credit cards, but like it's all kind of in the back of your mind and you might have the payments on autopilot and you don't really like see the reality of it until you write it all down on paper and you're like, holy crap, I didn't realize I had 100,000. I think that was me. I think I knew that I had debt, but I just didn't know like the severity of it until I added it up one day and I was like, yeah, this is not good.
So late 2018, you make the change, start paying all this down. When did you have it all paid off?
Yeah, so late 2018 is like when I read the Dave Ramsey book. It took me about a year to like put the principles into practice, I'll say, like to the point where we had a really like good plan that was working. And then it took us like about a year and a half to pay everything off. But I will say we had a really great income. We both make a really great income. and we don't have any kids. And so, you know, we lived on nothing and we were able to send most months like 5,000 a month towards debt. So, that accelerates it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, that's interesting. So, doing a timeline, 2019, 2021, did you start investing while you were paying off your debt, or did you start after you paid it off?
Yeah, so we had started, like I started investing in my company 401k in 2015, when I got my job out of college, and I started a Roth IRA at that time too. So all this time, you know, I had been putting money into the stock market, but we bought our first property. I would say we started really like hard paying off debt at the beginning of 2020, and then we were done like early 2021-ish. We bought our first investment property at the end of 2020. So we didn't have all the debt paid off, but we were really close and we had some money saved up that was in an emergency fund as well. And we knew we wanted to get into real estate. It was just a matter of like finding the right property, the right situation and all that. But we did cash out a taxable brokerage that we had that we put towards debt and we didn't do any other investing. Like it was just the 401k, the Roth IRA for that time until the, you know, the end of the year when we went forward with a property and then didn't buy anything else until the rest was paid off.
What was the thought process of cashing out the brokerage to pay off the debt?
It really was like jump starting it for us. We did the debt snowball, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but it's like you list your debts from smallest to largest and you pay off, you know, you make a minimum payment on everything and then you send everything from the budget to the first smallest debt until that one's paid. Then you roll everything to the second and the third and so on and so forth. So in our mind, it was like, we need to see these small wins. Like we need to like get momentum, like have wins. And at the time, I think it was like $10,000 in the brokerage. So it wasn't like we had $100,000 to cash out or something like that. It was a small amount, but it was able to knock out like the first couple of debts. And so it's also kind of like the interest rates on some of the debts didn't make sense. Like it wasn't, it was costing us more money to pay interest than it was that we would have made in the stock market. So it kind of just made sense from that aspect of, as well. And so that was just a personal decision that I think we made, but I've heard other people not do that, and I think that's okay too.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's really a right or wrong answer. But it sounds like mathematically and psychologically, that was the right move for you guys at the time.
Yeah, for sure.
So you have stocks and real estate. Not all real estate investors have stocks. As a matter of fact, a lot of my real estate investor friends, including my business partner, Alan, like did have stocks. And then they're like, nope, they find a real estate deal and they like, nope, that's it. Bye-bye stocks. Hello, real estate. So talk to me a little bit about why you have both.
Yeah, I think like I like being diversified, and I feel like after having a lot of debt and paying debt off, like I'm not as into like taking massive risks as I feel like maybe I was previously. Like I sleep really well at night knowing that I don't have consumer debt. I sleep really well at night knowing that one of our properties we paid for in cash and we don't have a loan out on. We do have other mortgage debt on other properties, but I think for me, it's a matter of just kind of being diversified amongst different assets. And if one doesn't work or doesn't go to plan, like you have something else to fall back on, is kind of my mindset. But the other thing is, like, I've been thinking about this a lot and talking to some of my friends. Like, you know, you hear in the stock market the 4% rule of like how much you can pull out from your stock investments every year. And so you think like if you have $1 million portfolio, 4% is 40,000. If you have a $2 million portfolio, 4% is 80,000. So I need to have $2 million of my own money to spin off 80,000 a year. In real estate, I think you can spin off a lot more money with less capital. And that's why I really like it as an investment because as you know, as an investment opportunity, because I think your money goes, you know, a little bit further in real estate, if that makes sense.
Totally agree with you. And I agree with the diversification. We have a good bit in stocks, not nearly as much as we have in real estate, but we like to have both. And we like to have some truly, truly passive income when it comes to stocks, something that's going to go up.
From
And
dividends.
you don't have to remodel. You don't have to make sure guests have the code for checking in and all those types of things. So we like to have some income that's like truly passive.
Yeah, I would say ours, like right now, like as far as net worth breakdown goes, it's like 2/3 of our net worth is in real estate and then 1/3 is in stocks. So definitely heavier real estate, but we've been focusing more on putting money in the market, just to kind of even it out a little bit.
Yep, totally get that. So what does your real estate portfolio look like right now?
So right now we have four properties in total. One of them is the primary that we live in, and then we have three rental properties. Or I guess I would say two rental properties that are rented and one that's under renovation. So they're all single family homes. First one we bought in 2020. We have a tenant. Second one we bought in 2021. We actually bought that as a primary. So we did lower money down, bought it as a primary, renovated it over the years that we lived there, the 2 years that we lived there, completely renovated the entire thing, bought property number three in 2022. That's the one I said we paid cash for. And then at the end of November, we bought a new primary home, moved into it, and then made property two a rental. And our tenant's moving in pretty soon here. So that's exciting.
Yeah, I call that primary hacking.
Yeah, it's such a good strategy because you can put less money down. I mean, live there, fix it up, and then make it a pro you know, an investment property later. I think it's underrated.
Totally underrated. I didn't even think of it, but I did it. When I bought my second house, I kept my first one. And it was like mind blown. I had this idea in my head, like you buy another house, you sell the first one. Right? You sell the first one, you buy a second one, you sell the third one, like on and on and
Exactly.
on. And then like my dad was like, I think you should keep the first one. I was like, hey, you're right.
You're like, why didn't I think of that?
Why did I think of that? Me with my finance
Yeah.
degree.
On property three, so we bought it and it's under renovation now. And it should be done hopefully in March. And we're like at the point now where we're trying to figure out what's the best route to go with this property. So it's like, it would be a really nice flip. And like, you know, we bought it for cheap. We put money into it. It's going to be a really great property. Should we sell it or should we do like the Burr method and do like a refi, cash out refi, and then keep it as a rental? So do you have any advice?
That's I would burr it all the way. I'm a fan of getting your money back out. I mean, I don't know what your numbers are, but let's say you bought it for 100 grand, you put 50 into it. Let's say it rents for 1500. That's not a great return on $150,000. Now, if you can leave much less than that in there and then do it again, that's what I would do. But I'm biased.
Exactly. And every real estate investor I talk to, they always say that their biggest regrets are the ones they sold and they wish they would have held on to them. And so I'm trying to like, you know, avoid making that mistake of looking back and being like, I wish we would have kept it just because, you know, you flip it and you sell it once and you make money on it once and that's it. Now you have to figure out what's next, where it's like if you keep it, can make money on it every month for a few years and make money when you sell it later. So if you sell it later, maybe you don't. But yeah, I think a lot of different strategies.
Well, and if you cash out refi, that's not taxed on, that's not ordinary income. You sell, that's ordinary income, your gains. So,
Exactly.
yeah. I mean, the United States tax code, left, right, and center, is very nice to real estate investors, right? And
Yes, I love it.
it encourages keeping your real estate and renting it out, to be honest.
Yeah, even like the 1031, like just
Oh,
the fact that you
100%.
can do that, you know, into like a like or like similar property, the fact that you can do that is such a hack too.
Yeah, well, that encourage. I did that. I did a 1031 exchange from a duplex that I owned outright to a 6-unit apartment building that I seller financed, and that opened up that duplex for an investor that maybe isn't comfortable going as big as a 6-unit apartment building to buy. So that was a
For
great
sure.
incentive, you know, where like it encourages you to trade up. Because imagine it didn't. I may not have wanted to sell that duplex. And then, you know, I'm not encouraged to grow. I'm not encouraged to like
Right.
have the 6-unit apartment building, have my four short-term rentals, my two long-term rentals, have a whole like economy running through that building every single year
Right.
versus this duplex. And somebody else can get in, right? So, and they bought and they and just this is such a weird deal in the sense that like they bought it in their IRA. So it was It was like a
Oh, wow.
contingent 1031 exchange from cash to seller financing sold into an IRA. So that was kind of interesting too.
Wow. Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
There's like when I talk to people about real estate, I think I realize that there's so much I still need to learn. You know, it's like there's so many different things that you can do and strategies and ideas that I don't even know are possible. And that's cool. I love learning and talking to people who do things differently. But I think the more I talk about real estate, the more I'm like, I have a lot to learn.
There's so much. You can't learn it all. I like the idea. I mean, you have single family homes in an, I assume, one area, right?
Actually, two. So
Two.
two are in Pittsburgh and two are in Erie.
Okay. So still relatively close. But so you're like,
Yes.
you are going to become an expert in single family homes and potentially remodeling, burring, that kind of a strategy, long-term rentals. From there, you can like add a strategy. Add a midterm rental, add a short-term rental, add a duplex, and then learn about that strategy and then move on from there.
Exactly.
I'm not the big, a lot of people, I think, go too wide too soon. They go into like wholesaling or flipping plus long-term rentals plus short-term rentals, and they try to learn all of these mobile home parks, all this. They try to learn all of these things, and it's too much like for any human brain to take in at once. It's like it's drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah, absolutely. Or like what people tell me is they like scaled up too fast, which is like another thing where like instead of just like taking it slow, learning as you go, one at a time, it's like in the matter of 2 years, you have 15 or 20 or, and you know, you're not an expert yet. And I, that would be very stressful for me personally.
That would get overwhelming quickly.
For
So
sure.
ask about your real estate portfolio. What is your stock portfolio like right now?
Yeah, so between me and my wife, we have each have a Roth 401k through our job. We each have a Roth IRA that we max out every year, and we pretty much just invest in like Vanguard index funds in the Roths, broad international and US markets. And then we have a taxable brokerage that we only buy ETFs in. So we, you know, made mistakes, you know, a few years ago. I mentioned how we had a taxable account that we ended up cashing out. It was all single stocks. Like I had absolutely no reason to think that I could do what I was trying to do in the stock market, but I thought I could at the time and tried day trading, tried options, tried penny stocks, single stocks, and like I just realized that I wasn't very good at it and that it, you know, I could probably just make more money holding on to stocks or ETFs and index funds long term and just kind of staying out of my own way as far as like trying to time the market and buying at the right time and selling at the right time and instead just dollar cost average into Vanguard ETFs every week or every month and just let it be. And so I would say I learned that the hard way, but I feel super confident in my strategy now because of the mistakes I made before. So that's a positive.
I hope somebody listening skips that stage and skips right to the index funds and ETFs based on what you said. But sometimes we need to learn ourselves. It's just how it is. We're humans. Sometimes that's what we need.
I wish I could have learned from other people's mistakes, but I'm just the kind of person I guess I have to make them myself.
Yeah, stubborn, would you say?
Yeah.
Headstrong.
Oh, I would say that for sure.
I know the type. I know that I am the type, actually. So my last question is about kind of goals in the future. You mentioned the
Yeah.
financial independence retire early movement, so maybe that's it, but how is your investing helping you hit these goals?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like my ultimate goal is to get to the point where the money that I make, the cash flow that I make from rentals and from dividends pays our monthly expenses. You know, I mean, I think it's pretty basic, you know, the money coming in from other sources other than our 9 to 5, covering what we're making at our 9 to 5 would be really nice. But I will say, you know, a few years ago when I really didn't like my job at all, it couldn't happen quick enough. You know, it was like, I can't wait to pay off my debt and have, you know, enough cash flow so I can leave this job and I hate it. And I since have a different job. At the same company, I've been at the same company the entire time, but I'm in a completely different sector and I'm doing something I enjoy. And, you know, I've kind of talked about it before on X, but I'm not as eager to walk away from my job anymore as I used to be or thought that I would be right now. Just because I know that I'm using my 9-to-5 income to fund my investments, and I have a really, really good life at my 9-to-5. I know that might sound crazy, but I have a good job where I make a good income, and I work Monday through Friday, and I'm off every night and weekend and holiday, and I have tons of paid time off. And you know, when you do something that's manageable that you enjoy, it's not as much of a want to walk away, I guess. So talking about goals in general, you know, I think like short-term goals for me would be like 6 months to a year. You know, I would like to get my renovation done, do the BRRRR strategy, get a tenant in there. We have a goal of hitting 200,000 in the stock market this year, which I think is definitely plausible. Midterm goals, like I would say maybe like 1 to 5 years, like I really want to start a family. You know, I like it's not money or finance wise, but you know, I would love to start a family, get to the point where my wife doesn't have to work and can stay home and raise kids. Like that would be a huge goal for me. And then like a long term would be like a 5 to 10 year goal would be hitting financial independence. You know, like I said, getting to the point where that now, you know, the money coming in from our investments is sufficient and we don't have debt, you know, so it can happen quicker and just own my time, own my freedom, really, I think was what a lot of people want.
Yep, love it. Love the whole breakdown. I can certainly see myself on my journey and what you're saying, and I hope others can too. Is there anything else you want to add, Lindsay, before we wrap up?
No, it was good. Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.
Absolutely. And we said it in your bio, but why don't you tell people again how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, on Twitter or X, I am at LindsayStamp3. I don't have any other social media or YouTube or anything like that, so that's the place.
And it's Lindsay with an AY. Sometimes it's EY. So I'll just say that Lindsay Stamp 3. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Adulting Is Easy. This will be on YouTube at Adulting Is Easy. Instagram, Adulting Is Easy Real. If you guys like this episode, you'll also like episode 138 with Justin from The Price of Avocado Toast, or episode 126 with Bernadette Joy called From Crying Over Debt to $1 Million Net Worth. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Hopefully, Lindsay and I have made adulting a little easier for you.